Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the podcast, everyone. So today's guest is quite interesting. Someone not in property, so not my usual kind of guest. It's someone who has a background in education, but also having quite a moment on social media in terms of growth. And that's kind of what I'm interested in with regards to a small business. So Shahnaz, please welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited. We've been wanting to do this for a long time. So here we are, I guess.
Amazing, amazing. Listen, we'll kind of fire through. So first of all, I think my intro is quite weak. Do you want to introduce yourself, please?
So my name is Shahnaz. For about 7 years, I was teaching in higher education, business studies. And about 3 to 4 years ago, I started my own business, which did very well. And that's what I'm doing the most at the moment. I've left teaching, which was a very, very hard decision to make because I was very passionate in teaching. And on the side, I do some fun things on social media. I make really silly videos, and it's just nice to be able to have that inner child come out in moments on social media.
We'll deep dive into that. So I think let's start from the teaching side of things.
Yeah.
I have no experience in this, but I guess my understanding would be when you see the adverts on TV around being a teacher, those are can teach, but I guess the expectation is it's quite low paid, but not a stress, not much reward. What was your experience teaching teachers like that?
So it was exactly like you said. We do a lot of hours, and a lot of the hours actually are unpaid, which it makes it really difficult because as a teacher, it kind of like becomes your full life. Before the hours you get paid, you need to sit down and prepare and mark, and you need to be there earlier to make sure that everything in your classrooms are ready to go for the students that arrive. And even once the students leave and go home, there's meetings and you still need to stay behind to make more presentations, mark books, and you just get things thrown at you, which you cannot say no to. So when it comes to the time spent with the students, that's amazing. Like, the kids are what the teachers are there for, the right teachers. But unfortunately, the schools are under so much pressure right now, and they're putting those pressures onto their teachers, which were being forced to leave. And now the kids are being left with less experienced teachers, people that are not in there for the passion. And that's why I guess that the education facilities are not as great, and the kids are not doing as great too.
Okay, I mean, sorry, just so I can get some context, were you in high school or primary school?
I was in high school in sixth form.
So what subject were you teaching?
Business studies, so anything covering like marketing, accounting, finance, HR. It was anything with business studies.
And why did you choose to teach business studies? Like,
well, my degree was in business, and I've always been passionate about business. When people talk about setting their own business up, or when I think about businesses, it's just my biggest passion, and that's why I always wanted to have my own business as well. But as soon as anyone comes up with any ideas and they want to talk about, you know, starting a new enterprise, you know, I guess so excited, I just want to join in and just have fun with it.
Okay, and sorry, just to go back to what you said about the pressures and people who, again, I'm ignorant to the situation. So from what I hear, that sounds similar to people in the NHS and medical staff.
Exactly.
Overworked, underpaid, but I suppose the difference looking outside in is they don't leave, they tend to just work through and not get paid a lot. When you're saying people in your field just have to leave, what do they do instead? What's the alternative to teaching?
So the alternative to teaching, you don't get many options. You just have to start a completely new career, because to become a teacher, you have to do a PGCE, and that qualification is a very hard degree, and that's only used for teaching. So unless you can use your experience in another field where like you're also helping train other people, then the degree is kind of useless. So I actually had to start over and pay for a lot of courses and qualifications to start a new business and to go into a different field. It's difficult, but it's something that we're forced to do. And when you mention NHS, it's not just the NHS, it's the police force, it's
public
people
service.
Social services, and everybody is under a lot of pressure, and the best people are leaving those facilities, those workplaces.
Yeah, it's not great, and you know, I'm seeing it with that. Like, when you started teaching, obviously, you know, you go into any new job, no matter what the job is, with a lot of enthusiasm, you know, high hopes and dreams, you've been sold the dream. Are there any, like, red flags to think in hindsight, like, hang on, this happened, so this is like things you realize afterwards, this was a red flag, this was a red flag.
This is something that a lot of teachers won't talk about if they're still in that career because it's something that they're scared to do. The biggest red flag is the SLT, which is the senior leadership team in those schools and colleges. A lot of them are extremely toxic. They don't care about your well-being. All they do is pressure you to do more and more without getting paid. And it's kind of like a bully environment. They act like they care about you. They act like they want the best for you, but they don't. If for example, you only get paid up until 3 p.m. and you're leaving at 4:30 p.m. and an SLT member sees you, which they usually do because they're always, you know, in near the exits, they look at you like you should be staying longer. So it's this, you feel bad for wanting to spend time with your family, with your friends, or have any social life. They just expect more and more. And it was the worst experience in teaching was during COVID, because we were expected to go into schools when other places were shut. And we were expected to do online teaching and teach in person and still be able to stay positive somehow. It was horrific.
Yeah, it doesn't sound great. And I've been in similar before from a red flag perspective, where I had an employed role, but there were loads of expectations pressured on to do out-of-hours stuff, but not paid for it. But it wasn't in the contract. And you look back and think, hang on, that's definitely a red flag. Things like that. Okay, what can people do to maybe spot these early on? Or maybe what can... How would say, I'm a new person getting into teaching, and actually I want some protection. I want something that I don't end up in a situation where I'm disheartened and just go through the motions and not actually enjoying the job.
It's going to sound super bad to say, but right now in the UK, 90% of the places, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
You have no choice. Even as a teacher, I was pressured into teaching other subjects that I wasn't qualified to do. So I was put into classrooms teaching subjects, and I was told that I could not tell the students that this is something that I'm not qualified to do. So you're actually lying to the students, and you don't actually know if what you're teaching them is of a high standard. But the level of pressure they put you under is ridiculous. And I've not just seen this in one area. I've actually taught in London for 2 years as well, at a place that seems outstanding. But even there, you had this horrible SLT member that just kind of like, they're like a gang of bullies when it comes to treating this.
Are they not answerable to like governors and stuff?
Yeah, but to be honest, in the past, there's been situations where teachers have actually got together, and we've got a thing called teachers union, where like somebody is protecting you, and if anything goes wrong, you've got this company that should stand by you. And every time a teacher mentions them, the way they get treated goes from bad to worse.
They can't be a whistleblower.
Yeah, so it kind of, they threaten you.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, there's been times where I've asked for notes from the HR when I've been sat with head teachers and had conversations, and the HR's been present, and they are supposed to take notes, and you're allowed to actually request them, and I've requested these notes, and they've never been sent to me.
Okay, I mean...
There's another place, you're going to find this one funny.
Yeah.
There's another place where we had to text the head teacher in the morning, on top of going through the HR, if there was anything wrong, like if we felt ill, something even serious happening, we had to personally text the head teacher why we did not felt like up to going into school that day.
So proper micromanaging, Big Brother style.
Yeah.
Yeah, like...
Controlling, toxic. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I mean, look, on the positive side, so I remember sixth form when I was there. And that's, you said you taught those ages. I still remember those teachers, because I think when you're that age, those are the people that kind of mold you a little bit. Were the kids at least positive?
Yes. Oh, God. Some of those kids I am going to remember for a lifetime. They actually made me into so much of a better person. You think that you're the person going in there and they're only learning from you, but the amount of things that you learn from students is unreal. Everybody's from different places. They've all got different experiences, backgrounds, and a lot of them come from poor upbringing and some of them don't. But the fact that you learn so many new things about them and how to deal with people that may be even on the health spectrum or ADHD, yeah. Dyslexia, all of these things is just rewarding. It's really rewarding. And there's a lot of the students that are now adults that have contacted me. Yeah, and which makes me so happy. Yeah. Like, I have a student, one of the students from the first place that I was teaching, she has her own house now, and a few of them have their own businesses. And these are things that I used to talk to them about, like, make sure you get a house, yeah. Make sure, you know, this is the way you're going to get super excited. Make sure you set your own business, make sure you always save up, and things that teachers sometimes don't
life
teach you. Yeah, life skills, yeah.
Interesting. And sorry, just side topic. So when you're a teacher, in that career path, what is like the top level? Like, do you want to become a head teacher? Is that like a path?
So this is the thing. A lot of people did want to go to that stage of being a head teacher, but I didn't.
Okay.
Being a head teacher, you're not teaching, but your relationship with the students is not as close as you can be as a teacher. So no, I didn't think I would ever wanting to be a head teacher. I just knew that from a young age, especially when I was in school, my English wasn't 100%. I wasn't born in this country. I actually had a business teacher of my own when I was in college tell me I'm not going to get anywhere in life. So these are some things that have stuck by me in school. When I struggled with subjects, I never was given an assistant teacher to help me. I just had to catch up by myself, really. So it kind of came from those times as well, where I thought, I want to be in a classroom where I'm making sure that nobody else is going through what I do.
So let me ask you a direct question. Would you recommend teaching as a career choice for someone?
No.
No?
Not in the UK.
Okay, what needs to happen for that to still be then valuable?
They need to give teachers enough time for planning and marking within the paid hours, and not pressure them so much into doing extra activities and taking on responsibilities that they don't want to do. Just mainly giving them less hours to teach. So for example, like 21 is the maximum that a lot of the teachers are allowed to have, 21 classes per week. But every teacher that I knew had those 21.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, you were put into a cover lesson. So if another teacher was sick,
yeah,
you were told last minute, you need to go and cover for them. So all your planning just went out the window.
It's crazy. And I remember from school days that if you were a substitute teacher, you'd have the worst lesson ever because exactly. No one respected you. Like,
no one just for some.
Yeah, okay. Sounds like there's a lot of work to be done. I think it seems to be a common theme, like we said, around public services. So police, NHS, teaching. Social services, the funding isn't there. The people who work there start off being very passionate about what they want to do, but in the end, they just go through a system and come out of it feeling very jaded. And
we're all really connected in a way people don't realise. It could be from reporting that you're worried about a student's well-being, which police and social services should get involved and. When they're all understaffed, things drag too far, checks are not being done properly, and people's lives are at risk here.
Okay, and the other thing I wanted to talk about was, I think this happening in Wales. I believe it's mandatory in Scotland, so probably going to come in England. The teaching of, what's it called, RSE, so Relationship and Sex Ed to like really young kids. What are your thoughts on that, first of all? Are you aware of...
So because I wasn't really dealing with any students that were that
this is
young,
preteen kids.
Yeah, so that young, we by the time the students were with me, they've already had those classes.
But what are your thoughts on that as an educator?
Yeah, so what age are we talking?
So we're talking like from 6 to 9 year old.
Yeah, I think that's really wrong. I think it's wrong. I think it's kind of like planting a seed.
It's making it, it's normalising things exactly. That they shouldn't even have a tool about.
Exactly. And there's another thing as well in school, which is really, really difficult right now. And it's a lot of people and students themselves being upset about losing their identity as a female or a male, which is a very touchy subject. I actually got in trouble once because this is how I address classes. I say, guys, it doesn't matter if there's girls,
could be girls
or boys in that class. But I always say, guys, come on, let's do this now. Like, guys, let's go, you know. And I actually had a student that was going for a sex change of going through a male to a female. And because I said guys, that's something that
offended them. Did it offend them or did someone say
it? No, it offended them. And I was at, like, I was pulled in a meeting. Oh, wow. Just be careful a little bit using the word guys. And the thing is, this actually is upsetting because as a teacher, then you have to promote things that are against your own religious beliefs or your own personal beliefs. I am happy for anyone if they want to be anything they want. But when it comes to forcing that onto other people, that's when it doesn't sit well with me.
Okay, you know, it's interesting. I mean, part of this RSE stuff as well is just linked back in teaching. So again, if a 6, 7, 8-year-old, 9-year-old, you know, preteen these are, if they are showing signs that they want to transition, the teacher has an obligation to help them transition away from the parents. So they're kind of pushing it a lot now on the teachers. And from what you said, it's a lot more work, a lot more pressure, a lot more stress, and a lot more intrusion when actually it's the parents' role, really.
Exactly.
And a lot of parents have challenged it and said, look, we're not happy, or we want to know the exact curriculum. And the schools said, it'll be age appropriate. But again, it's the parents' decision to decide when it's appropriate to teach their kids about these things. So yeah, do you know if that's happening in England? Is it Scotland?
It's definitely something that we've witnessed.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to be really careful to make sure that I don't mention anything about which place this was or what time, because, you know, you have to make sure that you're, you know, abiding by the privacy of people. However, what I can say is that a lot of students do approach you with this.
Really? Because they're not comfortable?
Because they're not allowed to go through a sex change. It's against their parents' beliefs or their own religious beliefs. So they're kind of coming to you as a cry for help.
Okay.
And we actually refer them on to other teachers which are special in this field, because personally, as an outsider, you look at it and you think, what? Like, what would you do in this situation? But then if you went against that child's wishes and you told their parents, what if the parents start to mistreat the child so badly to the point that the child harms themselves?
You can't win. You can't win.
Exactly. So as an outsider, I'd be like, that is really wrong. You have to tell the parents. How dare you keep that from the parents? But then when you're in that situation, if someone approaches you and they say, Shaz, this is how I'm feeling. I don't know what to do. I can't tell my parents. I'm stuck.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I did not think of it that way.
If the law wasn't involved, what would you do?
Yeah, they've come to you, it's quite a help. They clearly trust you. You're in a position of power,
if somebody
responsibility.
Came to you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and when you put it in that context.
What do you do in that situation? Because once you're in that situation, you think, everything that I thought is wrong about this is actually like, it doesn't matter if I believe in it, if my religion doesn't believe in it, if other people are against it or for it. In this situation, I just need to make sure that this person that's coming to me feels safe, that they feel like they can speak to somebody, because children can't manage their emotions like we do.
That's why they're children, yeah.
Exactly. So imagine how hard it is for adults. But as a child, you have nowhere to go. As an adult, you can pack up your bag and say, do you know what? Screw you guys. I'm leaving. I'm moving away. What's that child going to do?
Yeah.
They feel like the whole family is going to be disappointed in them, that they're going to be a burden on them for life. I know a few people that for many, many years have been hiding their identity to their own parents.
It's crazy. It is crazy, but I also, I think people, especially in certain cultures, you know, they have to, but they feel like they have to hide it. It's not spoken about. It's an unspoken thing. Yeah, I get it. By the way, I just realized, I ask all my guests this question at the start of the podcast, but we haven't asked you. Why do you do what you do? What's your reason? Not your reason why. Why are you doing what you're doing?
Anything that I've ever done.
By the way, sorry.
Work-wise, yeah.
I haven't done a podcast in a while. The question normally is, what's your mission statement? That's it.
What's my mission statement? What's my mission statement?
See, I'm rusty.
Honestly, to be honest, my mission statement is anybody that's dealing with me in work, especially leaves or is done whenever their experience is done with me, in terms of even if it's my business or if it was in teaching, that they feel better.
So they lean better than they...
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I always do this. It's not just to you. if I push you and say, like, be selfish, why is that? What does that mean for you, though?
Because the thing is, I'm working in a field now, aesthetics. It's a very toxic business, okay? So I say this because it's a business that makes people feel insecure as well as good. So this is a battle that I've had in my own mind. I'm working in a field where when I advertise what I do, it may cause insecurities in some people. So how do I go about that? Because it doesn't leave me feeling good. Even though it might be bringing me more money, it doesn't leave me feeling good that I may be causing some sort of an insecurity for somebody else to feel like they need to change something in their face to fit in. So what I do a lot in my day is I've actually sat down with so many people that have come to me for treatments and I've told them, you're not the right person for this treatment.
Yeah.
You don't need this treatment. And that's the way that I feel like through being honest and through not being so money focused only and treating everybody like I would my own sister or like my own brother, my own family, that I'm doing the right thing. And we've made mistakes. I'm not going to lie. Everybody makes business mistakes growing up. It's just about learning. To have this mindset, I'm a business owner. I was a teacher. I know more than everyone else. It's completely bullshit. It's completely wrong. No. I learn as much as other people are learning from me.
I think it's actually quite a skill. I'm learning this as I'm going through my journey, as it were, that it's actually a skill to humble yourself. Like,
exactly.
Because you can get into rooms and no one knows who you are. Like, so if I go to a property event, people kind of know who I am, which is great. But if I go to an event where no one knows who I am, the energy is different. You have to humble yourself to get into bigger circles. You mentioned as well, sorry, through the conversation, that you weren't born in this country. So where were you born?
I was born in Iran.
Mashallah. And how old were you when you came?
So I was 7. Couldn't speak English at all.
Really?
I guess when it was happening, it was kind of like, as a child, I remember, like, I don't know why I thought of it as like a holiday, because when I remember our life in Iran, it was a really good life. So
what was the reception of the UK in Iran at that time?
So not much, because my mum has a lot of family members that are already based in the UK. So she had been like, you know, my dad had traveled a lot, so they knew, but we didn't. I don't think I understood what was actually happening.
Okay.
That I was going to be away from like my favorite people and just have this completely different life. And when we came here, it was actually really hard. It was really lonely and it wasn't a great experience. I experienced a lot of racism from both English and South Asians, which is what the UK mainly is in the areas that I was.
South Asian,
yeah.
Is it? Yeah. It's that middle bit.
Exactly. Yeah. So as a Middle Eastern Iranian,
can't speak English properly.
Couldn't speak English properly. I didn't fit in any of the groups and you had to pick.
Yeah.
It's like it was kind of like pick a side.
Which, and you shouldn't have to, you know, you can't, yeah. It doesn't have to be either or, it can be and, you know, you can be friends. Yeah. At that time, I get it. So the kids were mean, okay. How long did that translate? I mean, at what point did you settle in? After how long?
At what point did it took a long time for us to settle in. I think, honestly, things started to only feel more normal towards the end of high school. And before that, my parents are very hardworking, very, very hardworking. And that's where that's where we get it from as well. But, you know, just seeing how much they worked affected us, because I wanted to spend more time with them, you know.
Sorry to interject, just so I know, because you mentioned that living in Iran was quite nice and comfortable. What was the motivation for your parents to move here then?
So this is the thing, people don't realize this. One of the main things that actually affected my dad's business in Iran was the imports and the exports that were sanctioned. So people don't realize that the laws here.
Oh, there's people on the island.
We're forced to make some move to carry on with our lives and to go into the countries that are actually causing us harm because they are affecting us so badly over there. So
collateral damage.
Right? Exactly. So when people ask me, I'm like, do you know what? I wish we didn't.
But when parents came over here, was it starting from zero again?
Yeah, so at first, you know, you can bring things over here as well, but, you know, from a Middle Eastern country, you want to bring something here, like with the currency exchanges, everything that you bring is divided, like, I think back.
I explained this to. I've got a family in Pakistan. I was born here, but I've got family in Pakistan. And they also want to come here. And I'm like, guys, look, when you come here, you'll be starting from scratch. No matter, you know, you've got a business over there, get treated like kings over there. You can come here, you can bring as much money as you want, but you're going to have to start from scratch, work in a restaurant, washing dishes.
How are you going to bring as money and much money as you want?
Yeah, again, you can't. So they didn't realise that, or they don't realise that. But from what you said, mum and dad are hardworking.
Yeah.
They're grafted.
Yeah.
And that is a work ethic, I think, that we carry on. So have you always been pretty entrepreneurial?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. It's always been on the back of my mind that I want to work for myself. I don't think I could work for someone else.
Are you unemployable?
Yeah, I don't want to work for anyone else.
Yeah.
And I like things to be done in a certain way, the right way. And the way I treat my clients is like family. Like, there has to be a line of professionalism.
I remember you telling me before that your clients, and I guess this is part of the profession that you do, they tell you everything about their lives, you know, and you have that duty of care and responsibility and privacy. But yeah, they tell you everything like they would tell their
parents. Everything. There is nothing that can shock me from the stories that I hear on a daily basis. And it makes me happy that they feel comfortable.
They trust you, yeah.
Yeah, that they feel comfortable to talk to.
Because if anything, you could be the one spreading it about because you see everyone within
exactly.
their circle. You don't.
Well, I will, of course, no. Like, I want that to be a safe place for them to come into. And not to only do things that make them feel a little bit better, but just, I don't know, like they're coming to somebody that they can trust, that they can not just trust with their secrets, but trust with their things.
With their
and, you know, and I always tell them, look, if there's anything that worries you at any point, message me. Like, it doesn't matter if it's the smallest worry that you have, message me. I don't ever want to be seen as one of those businesses where if somebody walks away and they have the slightest worry or slightest dissatisfaction, that I'm gone. I've got your money and I'm gone now. You know, I'm still around.
Money comes and goes, and I think
exactly.
it's people business, which is 100%. I'm in as well, and so are you. So let's talk aesthetics. Which part that feels for you in? I'm sorry.
So which aesthetics? So it's anything injectable.
Okay.
At the moment, the most excellent. I'm not going to talk about expensive. The most popular, let's say,
yeah.
The most popular treatment is PRP, and there's a lot of guys coming for it. It's for hair loss.
PRP, plasma or something.
Yeah, so it's basically...
Why are you looking at my hair when you say that?
I'm not looking at your hair. So it's when you take the client's own plasma and you inject it into the areas that are damaged to, you know, to help fix it. There's Botox,
okay.
Fillers, microneedling, skin boosts.
Hands-on and
breath. Very needly things that I don't know why this might sound a bit creepy, but I just love working with needles.
I'll forget that. No.
I love working with needles.
Is it something that needs a qualification? Do you have to have a qualification?
Yeah, of course you do. And let me tell you something about aesthetics. There's no way that you can go into this career and have one or two courses to be good at what you do and to be knowledgeable and confident in terms of not just making someone look good, but making sure that they're safe. When you're doing the treatments, you need to do multiple courses.
On that though, so because it's not a regular field, could anyone set it up and not be qualified? Like, is there like there's no
yeah,
it's not regular?
Yeah, okay. You can't just. I don't think anyone can just grab like some things and start poking someone's face without any courses.
And wish you have to read. Comments.
Yeah, well, if they did, I mean, I hope they get caught. But even if they are qualified, the thing is with aesthetics. There's a lot of cheap academies that are doing one-day courses where they're teaching people how to do this, and within a couple of hours, these people have certificates and they can get insured, you know. Yeah, yeah. But at the end of the day, they're going to cause people damages. They're not going to give people good results, and they're not going to be able to retain customers. You might be able to pull one or two customers and fool somebody, but are those customers going to return?
Probably not. They shouldn't.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about marketing your business.
Okay.
Because, look, aesthetics business is visual. Here's a client. Here's what I did to them. Here's what it looked like now. Do you want the same results? Come see me. That's pretty standard. But then I think you've taken the angle with the social media stuff, which is, it's not directly advertising your business, but it will get you business because people will relate to it and connect with you. And was that deliberate?
No, it was. I feel like I'm being myself because yeah. The thing is, I advertise my results, but I'm not one of those people that has to stay on my social media on a daily basis to post results consistently, like I'm begging an audience to book with me.
So Liz, I think it links back to what you said. You don't want, well, you said that you don't to make people feel bad.
Yeah.
So if you keep posting, if you look like this and you could look like this, that's just going to hurt people insecure.
Exactly.
So you don't do that. For you who haven't seen the social media, which click on it afterwards, I'll put the link in the podcast notes. Let me try and describe it. So it's kind of short reels, TikTok-y style videos, funny videos, but nothing to do with directly with aesthetics, but it's more a lot of humor, a lot of relationship-based type humor, I suppose, female-centric. It's all funny. I mean, what, you've had a million views on one of these?
Yeah, 4 million.
4 million? What was the concept? Was there like...
It was about stalking a guy, actually. By the way, can I just say, if you see these videos, don't take them seriously. I don't install CCTV cameras in guys' rooms.
You should. I didn't really read this.
You know. But the thing is, I do some videos where I pretend to be like this toxic girl.
Yes, I've seen.
And yeah, you've seen. And if you haven't seen them, you really need to see them, guys. But people love it. The more toxic the videos are, the more that people like it. And I kind of like, I've been on a lot of failed dates. So I'm using some fun stories and examples, you know, to raise awareness on that are wasting girls' time.
Interesting. Okay. Now, first of all, how do you play? Because content creation, I think, small to medium business owners, which I think is what we are, we need to create content. Create free content. Your advertising budget is zero. The reach is massive. So the return on investment is infinite because you're spending nothing, right?
Exactly.
So people say they can't do it, don't have time, they chat, right? What's your method? How would you plan this? Do you just go off the cuff? What do you do? I know you said you might need
to... So the thing is, you know what the crazy thing is? When I'm not posting, I'm really busy.
Oh, you're working?
So people, because that's because the videos that I've posted are all paying up. So even if I post a lot on my personal page and people are getting, you know, interested and engaged and they're following and they're interested, they want to see more, that page is linked to my business page. You know, someone's like, oh, look, this girl's really funny. They click on her account. Oh my God, that's a business page. Let's go to business page. Oh, look at that. I was thinking about doing this, you know. Oh, let me see how much it is. That's a good price. Let me book in. Yeah. So that's where we're going with this. A lot of people probably see some of the videos and think, oh, she doesn't have a life. You know, she's just making these stupid videos.
How much time does it take for you to do the content?
Honestly, not much.
Is it because you're not... Because
I'm dressed up already and I've got a tripod there. I've got my ring light there.
And being absolutely, for some of them you wear an outfit and you make them.
Like it could have happened now. I can make one right now. Right now.
So it's low effort, in a good way, not a bad way, but low effort in a good way. Low cost, you got the camera, but the results are coming in. What's the next step? Like, what can you do to enhance on that?
You listen to your audience.
Okay, what
so,
what is
your... for example, my audience like toxic videos.
So you want...
Girls that like toxic videos, girls that like guys being exposed.
Okay.
So this is the thing.
My hands are getting really clammy, you know.
No, but people like the truth. People like the truth, and
but nothing you've said, none of your videos are really controversial. It's a good topic. It's not like you're not deliberately being.
Yeah, I think there's a video that I did get a bit of a backlash from guys, and it's just something really silly, and it's because I've seen this in a lot of guys and girls, but obviously I have to talk about guys.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's guys that act like girls are trying to take advantage of them financially, but they're not even financially well off to be taken advantage of.
Yeah.
And this is kind of like, they love to brag and talk about, you know, girls are gold diggers and all this, but
where's
I'm
gold?
Looking at them, they're wearing the gold.
We got caught.
So I made a video and I said, you know, when guys talk about gold diggers, but they have no gold. And that video made some people
triggered.
Think, you're upset because you weren't able to dig gold. And I'm like, trust me when I tell you, I'm not digging for nobody's gold. I wouldn't be digging for nothing. If anything, people tried to take advantage of me.
Okay.
A lot of guys tried to take advantage of girls.
Keep your guards up, innit? Keep your guards up. TikTok, Instagram, what's the...
Thing is, when I uploaded on TikTok, I've not been on TikTok for too long, it blew up like video, 4 million, 1.8 million. Some of them were in thousands, some of them less. It's just a hit and miss. But it's been a while that I kind of backed off from TikTok, because TikTok has like this toxic thing about it. When you go onto TikTok, it's like your phone doesn't want to leave your hand.
Yeah.
And there's something about me that people like might not know if they don't know me, but when I'm out and I'm sat with somebody or I'm eating or I'm working, I don't want to be on my phone. I'll get on my phone and I'll do what I need to do and post the video that I need to. However, you will not catch me sat there stuck to my phone on social media.
I'm really bad at that. I'm not on social media. You know what it is? I try to apologize to anyone who's had a coffee with me. Like, I'm always looking at and glancing at my phone because I'm really responsive to people who message me. So if I end up having like a missed call and three messages and I haven't got back in half an hour, I feel like I'm gonna die. So apologies if you felt that from me. Okay. So TikTok is a time zapper. But I guess TikTok wouldn't get any business though, because the way I understand TikTok is you can have 10 followers, get a video with 10 million views, because it's the video that pushes out, not you as an account. But those views can be from anywhere, and comments can be from anywhere. And you're seeing, because of what your business is, they've got to be relatively low.
But the thing is, you can actually see where they're from.
Okay.
You can see
where is your audience from?
Do you want me to see?
Let's do it live then.
Yeah.
Let's go on. I'm just going to take a guess. I'm going to say there is probably a lot from Middle East, Iran, UK, obviously, and maybe some like Habibi Dubai stuff in it.
Let's see. That's your guess. So I'm just going to
go
in the past month, okay? It says, right, top countries, 74% United Kingdom,
okay.
5.2% Iran, 3.8% United States, and 1.4% is United Arab Emirates. So the top cities are Bolton, that's a town. Bolton, London, Tehran, and Manchester. Yeah,
man, like North Base, that's good, because you are hitting your
exactly
location
areas that I want, and that's with the hashtags as well.
Okay, I use social media and I do post. Everyone thinks I post more than I don't post a lot. Similar to you, I do want clients. I want to work with you, but I'm as busy as I want to be. Like, my balance is there, so I'm not gagging to get business. So therefore, I don't really use hashtags. I don't share stuff to my stories.
Okay,
I'm just quite laid back with it because I'm as busy. Like, I don't need. Yes, I'll work with anyone, obviously, but kind of like I'm not fishing for people, which is different. But
exactly, you need to be selected.
Yeah, like I'm here in Leeds, I'm speaking at an event, and even then the guy's like, Shaz, pick yourself up. I was like, no, if they want to call me, they can. So yeah, okay, that's good. And from that then, what do people DM you? Do people like message you for consultations? How is this all this?
It's all different, like... A lot of the opportunities I get are on email, but I'll be honest, I do get a lot of companies that offer to send me free stuff, and for a lot of them I don't get back to because it's not something that I want to do unless I genuinely read into it and I think this is interesting, this could actually work well for me. There's one that I am actually thinking of accepting. I'll give you an example, because I've read into it, it looks pretty cool. There's a lot of teeth whitening stuff that I'm not getting back to. And I'm like, I'm just a bit offended, you know? Yeah. Like, what are you guys trying to say? So this is an example of one. Someone emailed me. This is coming from TikTok. It's like a herbal drink, which helps boost your energy. It's all vegan and vegetarian. I'm not vegan or vegetarian, but, you know, when a packet says vegan, vegetarian, you think, oh, that's...
You know what it is, though? You know what it is? A lot of foods are vegetarian anyway. But then when you start promoting it as vegan or vegetarian, it could turn people off. I'm trying to think of an example, and I can't, but like Weetabix, for example.
Yeah.
It's wheat, so obviously it's super vegetarians and vegans. If you start putting it on the packet, it might turn people off. Like, oh, it's probably a healthier version of Weetabix, so I don't want to have.
Yeah, because they've not done that from the beginning.
Yeah, it's an
interesting And now it's one. A thing where...
Yeah, I listened to a podcast by a guy called Rory something, and he does comment on these marketing tips. He's just like, less is more sometimes. You don't have to label everything and thing. There's something I wanted to ask about this with you. So, yeah, by the way, I had my first message to monetize, like post something for money the other day. But I was speaking about branding on an event, and someone had asked me a question, do you monetize social media? And my answer was no, because for me, my monetization is I've got a business. So if they want to work with me, yeah, they can be a client. That's how they can monetize, as opposed to posting for money. Are you similar then? Because you have a business. I'm like, I guess what I'm trying to say is influencers, in good commas, generally, they don't have a business themselves. They just
fail to take on anything.
Yeah, they have personality, which is great. They're good at posting, they're confident.
Yeah.
They'll take on anything, post for money. They have a rate.
They don't have a limit on what they want to share.
Because they don't have an audience. They don't have a business on the back end.
Yeah.
But I think as I'm thinking about now, you'd be quite interesting because your business, if you suddenly throw your teeth whitening, your business could still function. It wouldn't betray your clients.
Yeah, of course it would. But then the thing is, with that teeth whitening, is it something that I've tried already? Is it going to affect my teeth? If it doesn't, like, I've made a mistake recently, and I'm not gonna bring the company's name into this because I'm trying
to
resolve
the story, though.
I know, so, but I'm trying to be a better person, right?
We have 3 listeners, it's fine.
Okay, really? Okay, so
<You're lying.
laughs> why shall I expose them? So this company, guys, story time. This company that I purchased the sofa from 2 years ago.
And purchase, paid
yeah.
money.
The last 2 years ago, I bought a sofa from this company called Royalty Furniture.
Okay.
And it came. The sofa was amazing. The fabric was amazing. I loved them. So 2 years have gone by and I wanted a change in my house. So what do? I contact the same company that I trust.
You were happy with them?
You know, I was happy with them. Everything was fine. And I even advertised my last sofas with them tagged in, which they got a lot of customers from. So my new sofas arrived. I sold my last ones. My new sofas arrived from the same company. It's been 2 years now. The sofas arrived and they are horrific. Like, I shared them all over.
I've seen the videos. So
yeah,
just contact guys. You know, you can knock into them. You can see like one layer of wood, like a plywood or something.
Yeah, there's no
yeah, they're not going to last, are they?
No, it's horrible, this sofa. It doesn't even clip in properly. There's gaps. It's all sorts. So I gave them, I messaged them. I told them I want a refund. And at this point, I'm panicking because I've tagged them into my social media. And my biggest worry is if somebody else orders sofas from them and they come off this quality, it's me that looks bad. I'm contributing to this because this is the power of social media. You need to make sure that you're working with the right people. So I'm panicking here because I'm thinking my followers trust me.
Yeah.
And anything that I've shared on here, they think Shadon has promoted them, so it must be okay. I'm panicking. I'm contacting them. I want my refund. All of this. I've contacted a few people that I know wanted to order from them as well to make them stop. They are ignoring me completely. They've just gone. They've disappeared. They're taking messages of other people. They're taking calls from other people, but they're ignoring me specifically. I even called them from a different number. And the guy realized it was me and cut the phone over my face. So what did I have to do? I went onto my social media.
Prim on blast.
Yeah. And I shared the username, everything. And the guy, I think, got a little bit scared because I do have videos of their faces in my house. And honestly, I don't want to put that on the social media. But I will if I have to.
If you've grown a platform where you have a voice, use it.
The thing is, a lot of people in their lives make a mistake, right? But the thing is, they've made a mistake and I hope that they learn from this mistake. And even when it comes to refunding the money, I hope that they learn that they can't just mess people around and not like this. But if I put their faces online, those faces are out there for life. The reputation that those guys will get will stick to them for a lifetime. And we know how much it affects people mentally as well. So what I wanted to do is give them the opportunity to reflect on this and to resolve it and not to do this to anyone
else. So the resolution is getting your money back, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, look, guys, if you're listening, you know, you listen to the podcast, you know, I know Tej Singh, Tej Talks. Listen, if you want to, I'll plug you with this guy. He'll help you get them a CCJ.
Yeah.
Give them a CCJ, you'll ruin their credit.
Yeah, I will do. But the thing is, I want to give them the opportunity to get my money back. So the guy has now, since he realized I'm not joking, he's promised to give me a refund on the 8th. But I, to be honest with you, I don't know if they're going to show up.
Is that when they're
fine? I don't know. I actually think they're not going to show up and they're going to disappear. And yeah, we're going to have more fun with this on Instagram.
Guys, keep watching. Keep tuned in for more in the diaries. Shabnaz and what was it called again? Royal Stairs?
No. Royalty Furniture.
Royalty Furniture. Just be very careful getting on not the wrong people. So just on that then, right. The good and bad of social media. We touched on a few things already. And that, I guess, is a bad experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the good and bad? Especially now when, especially younger people, teenagers, it's a lot of pressure to be on social media, to look a certain way, to, you know, show the best part of your life. Everything we all know about. What has your experience been?
It's something that I noticed working in schools more. The insecurities that kids have from a young age is shocking. Like, kids that haven't even reached an age where they even understand life properly, or finances, or the body growing, or relationships, they're acting like, I don't know, they're already hating their features, they've already been through 5 heartbreaks, and that the life's over, and, you know, everything's just depressing. And
I blame Taylor Swift for that.
Yeah. And the thing is, that a lot of these kids are being left in their bedrooms with devices, and they're not getting out. You know, we used to, as kids, go in the street at any opportunity we used to get and play games.
Yeah.
Where do you see kids now playing outside?
Roblox, Fortnite, Minecraft. They're like virtual 3D chat rooms. So they're socializing in a way, but it's not real interaction. And I think you end up with a generation of people who are just sofa junkies, just on their sofas. And I've read some research where people's posture these days has been affected because everyone's on their phone like this.
Socially awkward,
not to speak to people in real life. Because anyone can speak to someone online, you know, like, but when you have to speak to people in real life, it's completely different. It is worrying, but it's where we're headed. You know, everything is on this phone now. These phones are more powerful than most devices.
Yeah. So, it's helped a lot of people, but at the same time, I think it's caused more damage than it has helped people, especially with this whole new AI thing that's coming out. The fact that AI can, you know, generate real sound.
So was it Lady Gaga or Kim Kardashian? Someone did like a CG, an AI video, and it is hard to tell. I mean, after a while, you can tell it's not them, but it's just a video with a fake voice, fake video of them moving around talking, and it's nearly there. It's like 90% perfect already. But again, sorry, back to what you do as aesthetics. You're blessed. You're in a field where AI can't replace what you do, right?
Exactly.
Aesthetics, barbershops, hair salons, car garages, all these things, actually, bricks and mortar type stuff, can't be taken online, can't be taken to AI. So you're in a good field, right?
Yeah, hope so.
Unless we develop a robot, unless Max Factor.
Develop a robot that gives people treatments. And to be honest, even with aesthetics, I'm trying to do more of the health side of the treatments,
yeah,
as opposed to features, because it's more rewarding. Like, for example, migraine Botox is probably one of the best things that I can do for people.
Migraine Botox.
Migraine, people that suffer from severe migraines. Yeah, of course.
I'll link up with you after. Another thing I ask everyone is, can you open up your Instagram?
Yes.
Yeah. And can you go on your explore page? Because it's just a test to see if the algorithm knows you better than you think. So what's on your explore page versus what you think should be on there?
Right, let's see. I'm going to click on some random video, okay? Yeah, there's a picture of the Love is Blind couple that got married. I think that is something. Love is Blind, you need to watch this. Guys, if you haven't watched the new season of Love is Blind, you have to watch it.
It's like a voiceover,
honestly. And then we're watching a video.
Traditional dance.
Traditional dance, this is pretty cool. I think that's something.
Okay. But do you agree with all this stuff, the algorithm is feeding you?
No, but there's something that's really bothering me about the algorithm right now. There's about 7 pictures of brides.
Oh. Oh. Is this ominous?
Look, it's all... Oh, maybe this is because we went to a bridal shop.
Well, there you go.
For my cousin.
This knows your location. Crazy,
isn't
it?
Listening to us. She was trying on wedding dresses.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah, so
my feed right now, because it's Ramadan, my feed is full of food recipes.
No way.
It is, yeah. So this next week and a half is just going to be all food. But yeah, it's interesting. I find that these social media websites and apps, they know a lot of information about you.
Exactly.
And that's the thing. You've got to be careful about, mindful about what you're putting out there, because someone said to me before, they were a proper influencer, not like me. But they're like, look, don't post where you are live in the moment, because if you live alone or whatever, people know you're not at home, didn't go rub your eyes.
100%.
Stuff like that. So you've got to be careful. I think it's got to be responsible. I think social media is very good. Helps my business, helps your business. But just be sensible about how you use it. And just, I think, know the limit to when to stop. Like, for example, I think, again, I'm at a happy balance where my social media is just for business now. You know, I don't post any personal stuff on there. It is just a business account with a little bit of personality, I suppose. But you've got to be sensible.
Yeah, of course. Really mindful, because once something's put out on there, you can't take it back.
Yeah. I mean, on that, what are your thoughts? You know, like when they see football players or TV celebs and they get cancelled for like something they posted 6 years ago? I just think it's a little bit...
No, that's too much. Something from years ago, like, is completely different to who you are now.
Yeah.
I mean... For some things, like the way me and my friends spoke to each other when we were in college and the words we all used against each other as a joke.
Plus Twitter is crazy. Stuff I post on Twitter back in the day, not I wasn't offensive, but someone could read that and think, God, I don't want to work with this guy.
But yeah, of course. But no, I don't think people's past should, I don't know, like, it shouldn't determine who they are.
Yeah, maybe if you bring it up and say, look, can you explain this, or is this, do you still feel the same?
Yeah.
Just give a chance to go, oh, I was like 16 years old then, you know what I mean?
Yeah, or delete it, like, you know.
Yeah. I just find that, okay. Would you ever go on The Apprentice? Segwayed it that way quick, didn't I?
The thing is, when I've watched that show, there's a lot of arrogant people. And the thing is, I can be very calm and patient, but once I switch, I'm and I get angry. Like, there's no switching on.
Is it 0 to 100, but takes a while to get...
Yeah. Watching that, like, a lot of people are just acting like they're something that they're not. Like,
have you watched this show?
Not this
thing. A friend of mine was on there, mortgage broker Raj. Shout out to Raj, got evicted this week after nine episodes. She was the winning team, 8 weeks. Lost one, and then they just got...
What a shame.
Yeah, but...
In the past I've watched that, and it's actually really annoyed me, and I couldn't actually carry on watching it because there's a lot of people on there that are arrogant.
Something not business-related stuff like... Not to insult you, like, yep. Love Island, all that kind of stuff. Would you do that kind of stuff?
Would I do?
Those kind of shows, like Love Island.
Oh, no.
What was that show you just said? Kiss, no, was it
Blind? Love is Blind? Yeah, no, I wouldn't even be able to.
What is that show? Please explain.
Love is Blind is where there's a wall.
Yeah.
There's a wall.
Okay,
they're setting up blind dates with a group of females and a group of males. They go into these rooms and they speak to the other person behind a wall.
Okay.
And they keep swapping them over, obviously.
So
you basically, let's just say, for example, 10 girls, 10 boys, and they keep going in different rooms and they're talking, but they can't see each other and they're not allowed to talk about appearances. So by the end, by the last date that they're on, they propose to each other and they get engaged.
Engaged? What?
Yes!
Okay, that's the extra sort of...
Firstly, no, I wouldn't be able to get married to someone unless I see them.
Bloody hell. It's like a blind date, but...
Extreme. And also, I come from a very, like, my parents were very cultured. Like, Iranians, majority, I don't speak for all, but were very, very cultured, full of tradition. I don't know about being very religious. We're not going to go into that. But the thing is, like, just keeping it real, only because you may see Iranians wear more casual things that you might not see other people wear. That's partly why I had a lot of racism in school as well, because of that difference, you know. But we still would never be able to be on a TV program where we even hold a guy's hand.
Yeah.
Like, no way.
Yeah.
Like, no way.
No chance.
Never mind getting married.
Listen, Channel 4, if you're listening to this, please don't send any messages because she's not interested.
It's not going to happen.
So what's your, like... from a business and personal perspective, the next 5-10 years looking like? Have you planned that far ahead?
I do want to invest in another property. I do want to.
If only you knew a good mortgage broker.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, it's just not the right time right now. Everything's just so crazy. You know this yourself. Like, it's probably, this year is probably the hardest year for people so far to invest in a property. Obviously, if you think otherwise, we can sit down and, you know, you can guide me. I'd love to learn. But not right now, but I do want to, because the thing is, when you own your own business, you need to have a backup plan. If I need to put more time for myself to travel, to socialize more. And every time I'm off, I'm not earning.
That'll be my question. Sorry, what does downtime look like?
There is no downtime. I don't have a downtime.
Okay.
I don't have a downtime. Even when I get help with my messages and bookings, I still need to double check everything. If you're going to open your own business, be prepared for the hours. But it's rewarding because it's for you.
Could you, in the future, would you ever want to grow like an academy and train people and then...
I would not mind doing that because there's right now the gap in the market is there is no proper school of aesthetics. It's with people that have actual teaching qualifications. So this would be PGC skills with aesthetics and to teach people properly, not within a day or two, but weeks of training. Where people leave and they not only feel comfortable and confident to inject people's faces, but again, the health side of it.
Okay, so it's something to look out for in the future.
Yeah.
Now, as we're kind of wrapping the podcast up, I think, you know, you mentioned that you've had the education side, which started off great, perhaps the end wasn't so good. But now, would you say you're passionate about aesthetics?
Yes, definitely.
Is it because of you see the end, you see how happy you're making people feel?
Yeah, like I actually meet some people that, for example, I've met a lot of girls that will not get even in family pictures because they have one small insecurity on their face, which is so easy to, I don't want to say fix, but easy to amend.
Yeah.
And doing that slight change, that small change on their face, which is not changing them completely, it's just a small enhancement of their own feature gives them the confidence that honestly when I see their reaction when they look at themselves, it's just but a lot of people take advantage of them.
Okay.
They could go to other places where they say, oh, actually you need this as well and you need this as well, and that's when
they see that people they're like a target and stuff. And have you ever turned people down because
all the time
they're not mentally in the place where they actually should be?
All the time. So many people after breakups are coming in, I want to do this and I want to do that and I want to do that. And like the reason why clients have told me this themselves and they've said, what our favorite thing about you is that you never push treatments on us and you tell us no. You tell us when to stop because sometimes it's addictive.
Yeah.
It's addictive.
It can be. And I think, you open yourself up to... One more thing. And it becomes an issue. And then that's when you see people not to be negative. Just, you look at them and you think, that's one too many.
Yeah.
Generally, they don't want to stop. Okay, dealing with clients. So people who know me, they know I'm pretty open and I'm quite direct and blunt with people. Like don't send me a WhatsApp. Don't send me a picture on WhatsApp. Don't send me files. What's your pet hates with clients and how they deal with you? Like, Google me late, for example.
When it comes to money, I make it really clear to them, like, if they're late over a certain amount of time, that I cannot do the treatment. Because the main thing that I love giving clients is privacy. I don't sit them in a waiting room where they're seen by other people. A lot of my clients that come, they don't even want other people to know they're having treatments. They're hiding, even from their own husbands, even from their own mums. So... they don't want anybody else to see them come in and go out.
Yeah.
I've made this policy of one person in at a time, and I stick to that. What I don't like is people messing me about with
haggling on prices. Do you get that?
Oh, yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah. And how do you deal with it?
Well, I kind of just say, look, this is the price for this quality of product. Like, this is the price that it is because I'm using the best brand. If you want me to... charge you less, I'll get a cheaper quality for you,
which I never do.
It's just how an example that I give them, because who wants to pay less and have something cheap put into their own face and body? Wear something like that to them, then they're kind of like, oh no, because I do use the best and I'm not going to negotiate.
And have you had any horror stories where you've had to remediate someone's bad work, for example?
Oh, yeah.
How long have I got?
Oh, no, a lot. Like, there's been a lot of dangerous scenarios where you can call people on Instagram.
Yes.
And I'm getting a call, and I'm getting a call, and I'm kind of like, just thinking, this is a new client that's maybe just trying to get a booking. It was like 11 p.m. I'm ignoring it. They called again and I just had this funny feeling. So I answered the phone and this girl said she had filler done in her nose and her practitioner is ignoring her.
Okay.
They actually saw the messages too, but they were completely ignoring her. And they don't give them an emergency line or any contact numbers. It's kind of like, we're closed now, gone away. And this girl was losing the blood flow in her face and her nose. She had a vascular occlusion, which is basically when they have put filler in an area where it's blocking the blood flow in that vein. And she needed hyaluronidase. A lot of hospitals don't stock hyaluronidase. They can flush the filler with sodium chloride, but it's not the same. And I told her to come down. It's really risky to do, take on a problem that's not yours. But if you've got the right paperwork and, you know, you record and you take pictures and evidence of everything, then yeah, I wouldn't be able to turn down helping someone.
Madness. Right. I'm going to end with two questions. Like I said, I'll put all your contact details in the thing. Okay, what do you need help with? So someone's listening and they can help. They have different things they can offer. What do you need help with right now?
What do I need help with? What do I need help with?
Could be anything. Could be to do with business, you know, graphic design, video editing, I don't know, anything.
Oh, yeah, it could be 100%. And maybe they could look at... What I love is people that are critical and they well, have a look at my social media or my business page. Tell me, if you were my customer, what is it that you'd be looking for that you can't find easily, and be as critical as possible. And
you need like what they call a non-executive director, like objective opinion or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like go onto the page if you think, I don't know, there's some information that I should have on there that's not easy for you to find. Tell me.
Okay.
I'd be more than happy to.
Perfect. And on the flip side, how can you help people?
How can I help people? Oh. The thing about me is that I love helping people as well. Like, I don't know how I can, I'd be able to, I can motivate people. I can, I'm really good at helping people realize their self-worth when I know that they're in a toxic situation. Especially when it comes to realizing that that person is the way they are, or they're down or depressed because of the environment that they're in. I'm really good at it's kind of like a wake-up call. Like, I could sit down and help somebody come out of and make them snap out of it. It's kind of like, I can tell that you're in a dark place. Because of this, you need to snap out of it. I'm really good at doing that. But there's loads of signs that people need to look out for as well. It's like
flags, isn't it?
Yeah, red flags. Especially in your friends and family. To remove toxic people. It doesn't matter if you grew up with them. It doesn't matter if you know them for 10 years in primary school or since, I don't know, you were born with, like, it doesn't matter how close you are to those people. If they are bringing you down, leave and move on.
Yeah.
And find a better environment.
I found a middle ground with that, by the way, because I find it hard to completely cut people off, but you can limit the interactions with them.
100%.
Set up some boundaries where you don't answer every call they make to you. You don't reply to every message because, you know, they're just going to drain time and energy. So you're not completely cut them off, because I just think that's a bit harsh sometimes, depending on contact. But limit your interactions, limit the energy you give to them, because they're not going to give it back to you. So.
With some people, you have to. You can't just cut them off because there's so too many mutuals.
Yeah.
But if there's no mutuals, I cut them off.
Vicious.
Yeah, I'm poof, gone. You are poof, done.
Done.
Finished, honestly.
Rubble done, headshot.
Because it's too much. It's too much. And you know what? It's when you do things like, it could be for some older people when they have kids, when they realize who their true friends are. For me, it was when I set up my own business and you kind of realize that the people that are supposed to support you the most aren't even supporting you.
I agree with this, by the way. And people do show their true colors. And I don't know, so it's a weird psychological thing where people don't support their mates' businesses, will support Rihanna. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But there's a guy I follow. I'm a big fan, where everyone knows this, Daniel G on Instagram. And he's a sales trainer, and his reframing of it is, not to say it's right or wrong, is that look, if you want or rely on your friends and family, your warm circle, to support and promote your business, if that's what you're relying on, that's probably a bad start to make, because that's people just pitying you and saying, support my friend. Eventually, when they come round, when they see how successful you are, they'd be like, oh, you know what? That's more business you started. I can see you really well. You'll feel much better about it afterwards. Exactly. So, yeah, people should support your mates' businesses. But actually, it doesn't matter if they don't.
I don't know. It just, it really winds me up, especially when especially when people come to me and they're like, oh my God, that post that you posted of that treatment, that looks really good. Like, what's it about? Like, they're basically interested about having the treatment. And I'm kind of looking at them like, you didn't even like that post.
Yeah.
You didn't even comment on it. And you're supposed to be really close to me.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, if my friends look good or bad on a picture, I will like and comment this out of that.
Listen, right? Girls' Instagrams are wild. Hasan Minhaj did a thing on Jimmy Kimmel. It's like, you got any girl's Instagram, anything she's wearing, met in the comments from other girls are like, ravishing. You look amazing. Yeah,
that's girl. How it should be. That's how it
should be. Imagine guys did that to each other.
There's not a bro.
Bro, looking... you look so buff.
Yeah, I know, bro looking. Bro, you look fly. Yes, my G.
I am mind blown. They put me in prison.
No, not that. And don't say mind blown.
Right.
That's going to be like a... You're going to have to put no homo as a hashtag.
Yeah, guys, if you use no homo as a hashtag, just to understand it came from this podcast. So, right, just as we're ending, thank you for your time.
No, you're welcome.
I think we could do this. We could stay on a bit longer, but I think an hour is good for a podcast.
Yeah.
And nobody got the time. So it's been a pleasure, absolutely. And look, thanks for sharing what you have shared today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Peace out. Until next time, ciao for now.